This is Access Houston on 97.9 The Box.
Yes, good Sunday morning. You are listening to Access Houston on 97.9 The Box. I'm your host, KG Smooth. In the studio with me, you know, this just came on a humble and God could not be so more on time. I am in the studio with Shakira Dennis, who is the co-founder of Houston Justice Coalition, and Darrell Douglas, who is also co-founder of Houston Justice Coalition. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you for having
us. So, really quickly, so this is what happened. I'm in the studio and Jay Mack comes and pulls me out. He was like, hey, there are these great kids from TSU that's trying to change the world. I think you need to talk to them. And so I come in and I meet these two incredible young souls, and they are trying to change the world. And I said, you know what? Hey, let's talk. Let me get you on Access Houston right now. And here we are. So let's talk about the Houston Justice Coalition and what it's about and what you all do.
Okay.
The Houston Justice Coalition is an issue-based campaign here in the city of Houston geared towards addressing social justice issues. Mm-hmm. And we have a multifaceted tier system onto how we want to transfer a lot of the energies that we're recognizing via the protests and other community outlets and forums into actual action-oriented items. And we'll let Darrell talk a little bit more about those actions.
So, so literally, you know, a couple of weeks ago, about 3 weeks ago, we're at the rally here in Houston at McGregor Park after the no bill for Darren Wilson.
Yes. And it's I was there.
It's actually, you were, and you had an iPad.
You interviewed me.
Oh,
okay.
Look at that.
You were on my
smooth video. Exactly.
I didn't even realize it. How about that?
Okay, so yeah, you were marching with us. Right. Like, you were in the cuss. So there was all this energy, and you know, Shakira and I and some other friends were like, man, like, we got to do something with this. Like, people are fired up. Like, we can't just protest.
And it wasn't just us.
It wasn't just us. No, it was white people, black people, Asian people, Latino people.
Older,
younger.
Yes.
I mean, it was just a sea of people.
It was incredible.
So we were like, man, we have to do something with this. And like, there's so much power. We can do something locally. Like, yes, this is a national issue, but we can plug this energy in locally and actually do something about it. So that's where Houston Justice Coalition came from.
Wow. Yeah, well, I'm glad that you all started this up, because this is something that definitely needs the light shined on it. Especially with everything that has been going on. And it just seems as though, you know, black lives don't matter.
Exactly.
Even though, you know, they do.
Exactly.
So let me ask you all, what were your thoughts? Let's go back to, I'll take it back to Trayvon Martin.
Okay. Okay.
Your thoughts on, you know, did you all watch the trial? Did you keep up with that story? And then once the verdict came down, you know, what your reactions?
Go ahead, Shakira.
I was actually the student body president at Texas Southern University at the time when the Trayvon Martin happenings, you know, were going on. And so I kept thinking, you know, what could I do? One, about the circumstance from the capacity that I was currently serving, especially being, you know, the head of a prominent organization at the only historically black college in the city of Houston. And so we put on a program, you know, invited all kinds of organizations out. NAACP was at the forefront, Urban League and other folks, even our elected leadership. And, you know, we just wanted to be in solidarity with what was going on. And folks were, you know, organizing. And there was this huge collegiate initiative to bring folks, you know, together to increase consciousness, which I thought was important.
Yeah.
But now, you know, fast forwarding, like, I'm in a different space, in a different position now when Mike Brown came down, Alfred Wright, Tamir Rice, and to where now, you know, I have the skill set and the know-how to transfer that into action items. Because back then, I'm just like, I'm just a kid in college, trying to use my capacity to do the best that I can to make sure that they know that things like this matter, and that when they leave here, they shouldn't just turn, you know, their head when stuff happens, because if it happens to one, it has a propensity to happen to all.
Absolutely. So. Yeah. Darrell.
Same thing for me. At the time, I was a community organizer working for a Texas Organizing Project, you know, going out organizing around issues in the community, but not around, you know, justice reform, which is something that I think really hits me like deep down in the soul. So when, you know, I think just like for a lot of us, you know, we were waiting on the verdict, but in the back of our heads, we've been kicked and stepped over so many times, it was just expected that there would be a no guilty. And to see that happen, you know, in the case of Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman, who's still out there to this day, every couple of weeks getting into some kind of trouble. Right. But what's like after that, these last several cases, that's what I think a lot of people are really getting fired up about. It's not guilty or not guilty. These people didn't even have to go to trial.
Right.
Didn't even have to go to trial. So yeah. That's saying that, like, you know, Jordan Baker's life is not even worthy of a trial and actually pulling out all the details and figuring out exactly what happened.
Mm-hmm. So, and George Zimmerman, he was not a cop. So, you know, we thought that something might have come out of that so the family could have a little closure or just something, but
nothing, not so much.
So then we fast forward. So who was next? Was Jordan Baker next or was it Mike Brown?
It was Mike Brown. Mike Brown was
actually so it was go. It was Alfred Wright.
Alfred Wright.
Yes. Right outside of Jasper.
Mm-hmm. I forgot about that.
A lot of people have, because with Alfred Wright's, it got swept up so fast because, you know, once he was murdered, there was just all this issue. They wanted the DOJ to intervene in immediately because they feared that because it was such a small town, they would destroy evidence. Because again, with those, there's one coroner.
There's no oversight.
There's
right.
one this, one that, minimal oversight.
People are related.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so they were worried. And this was an African-American man who was married to a Caucasian woman. Mm-hmm. And so who was a doctor. Right at that, and who they said, oh, he had all these drugs in his system, and, you know, oh, this was a drug-induced tangent he went on that led to his death. But, I mean, when you find a man with his penis severed, his two front teeth kicked out, you know, his throat slit, his eyes gouged, there's a different kind of, you know, like statement that, you know, the nature into which he was
being
killed
savages.
Represents. Right. Exactly.
Right. Yeah, that was unbelievable. So then we had Mike Brown. I was on top of the Mike Brown situation from the jump. Like when it happened on that Saturday afternoon, my youngest brother, he went to school in St. Louis. And so when it happened, I called him up and I was like, have you heard about, you know, boy who at the time he was still
18,
lying dead in the street.
Right.
Absolutely.
When I reached out to him, and he was like, "Yeah, you know, I used that Ferguson is right around the corner from where I used to live, and it's just a little neighborhood." And so that Sunday, I was on the air, and I was telling the listening audience on Sunday about this case and to watch out because this is going to be huge. You know, and I specifically remember saying that. As a matter of fact, my brother got in touch with a gentleman who he went to school with there, and they were actually at the first protest that was at the police station in Ferguson that Sunday, the Saturday after Michael Brown got shot. Right. And so, you know, I got him on, and he, you know, told me the pulse of the city and some of the things that they knew and how the police were holding back the name of this officer. And so I'm telling folks, like, stay on top of it. I stayed on top of it as we saw it escalated with the protest. Right. We saw the incredible militarization of police, and that just blew me away. I'm like, yo, is this the United States or is this Afghanistan?
It looked like Syria.
Yeah.
You know,
like, what is really going on here?
Right.
You know, it was just beyond me. And I'm up at night. I'm on Twitter. Hashtagging, you know, live streams, and I actually watched in real time when everything unfolded because I'm stuck to my MacBook at night, you know, watching these live streams. Go ahead.
And that's important because, you know, a lot of times, you know, we lose focus and we don't keep the momentum and the energy going behind issues that are most important to us because once we see it, we share it. You know, social media-wise, we share the story and we leave it alone.
Right.
And so that's what I think is so organic and unique about what we're doing. We saw it, you know, we shared it, and we came up with solution-oriented means to keep people engaged and keep them organized around it, these kinds of issues. Because how many issue-based campaigns surrounding African-American issues have you seen?
Right.
I mean, be it education, be it healthcare, be it anything for us, you know?
And it's gaining traction.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, we sat down and listed, you know, different possible campaign goals that would literally address Ferguson, that would literally address Harris County, which is like ground zero for the need for justice reform, and actually plugged in and set guidelines and said, how can we do A, B, and C?
So with the grand jury, the non-indictments of both Darren Wilson and, you know, this officer in New York with Eric Garner, as I look at the makeup of the people who were chosen to be in the grand jury, it's like, well, where's the equal representation here?
Right.
Now, do you all know where the problem lies with that? Is it because we are not, you know, go ahead.
It's blatant, okay? If you look at, first of all, the way that, because there are two different types of juries. There's the jury that you get jury duty, and, you know, you have to go, and if you don't, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But then there's grand jury where indictment or not non-indictment is decided. So the way that people, in order to do that, when you have to apply, you have to print out a form, fill it out, get it notarized, and then turn it into the Harris County Criminal Courts. How many people, it's 2014, how many people do you know will go out of their way to do that? And when you do, you do so with the understanding that you have to be available 2 days out of the week for the whole day for 3 months at a time. That is such a huge burden to expect for your everyday person who has a 9-to-5 job.
Right.
Who's able to do that? Then even on top of that, the fact that even if you do go through all of that, and you know, make it through, they don't even have to use that pool to select who's on their grand jury. So they use what's called a pick-a-pal system, right? So if there's Judge Darrell Douglas, I then get Shakira, who's a good friend of mine, and I say, hey, you know, it's about that time of the year again. Can you go and round up? Let's see, I need 12. Can you get like 20 just in case, you know, we don't like, you know, and then you bring in the 20 people and then we choose the 12 that are going to be on the jury. It's literally like that. Like I literally, me personally, because I'm getting ready to do it, I got a phone call from someone who was like, yeah, you know, see you doing this stuff in the community, whatever. Do you want to do this grand jury thing? Right. So in my case, it's like, oh, this is someone who's cool, who's prominent, who's, but just to imagine the 37 or 39, I forget which number it is, courts each do it their own way. Who's making those phone calls?
Who is making
for
those
judges?
Wow, that's I never knew how that worked. And so to simplify it for you, the listening audience or child that is up at 6 a.m., just imagine that you are at the club in line standing behind the velvet rope and security is saying, okay, you guys can come on in. That's how a grand jury is picked. That's basically how Darrell just explained it for you in lay terms. Yes. So is the process with that judge going out to pick, you know, Tom, Dick, Harry, Susie, Bobby, Cindy, and Mike, is there a certain requirement or, how does that work? No, you just, Shakira, Shakira Dennis just says, hey, you, come on through.
And not even the judge. The judge picks a commissioner who's not even elected, who's not even.
They delegate the responsibility to someone else whom we have no idea. All we know is that they're going and picking their friends because, I mean, it's indicative in how indictments are passed down these days. So
the whole system is jacked from the jump.
Yes.
It is.
Yes.
And it's working in favor.
And it is working in favor.
Of those people that, you know. Because they want it to work in favor.
For, you know, the Michael Brown case to have no indictment, I was surprised because, as I said, I kept up on this from the jump. When you have the community of St. Louis and Ferguson saying to the governor, pick an independent prosecutor to, you know, handle this grand jury because he has a past of shady dealings and he's in bed with the police department,
and
which all DAs, you know, they work closely with the police. So that's, you know, if you know about criminal justice or whatever like that, you know, that's to be expected. But, you know, when you've got the people already crying out that there's some fallacies with this character here.
Right.
And then when he announced it, he just had this smug on his face and it was.
He lacked a little sensitivity in his delivery. And I think a lot of people around, you know, the nation could feel that his lack of regard.
And then it comes out that one of the officiators gave the grand jury the wrong law.
Right. I mean, it's a mess. It's a mess. And if you think about it, I don't know. Do you watch The First 48 on A&E?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I do like those marathons on Saturdays. I know y'all do at home, too. But it's like, think about when the officer, when the detectives are out there, right, and they find Bobo, right, who they say is a suspect, but they need evidence, right? So you got to get this and this and this. So who will charge him? Who is it that you need to charge him, right? The DA. The DA is the person who says, okay, you got enough. Go ahead, bring him in. Well, in this case, the person who you're trying to charge is the police.
Police.
So it's like, oh, we've been dependent. Like, the, if I'm police, I've been like working with the DA. Like, come on, man, we can get him. We've been, you know, working together this whole time, and now it's one of us who, you know,
who's in trouble.
Do you think he's going to get charged or not? No,
probably not. And well, so then we fast forward to Eric Garner.
Yes.
And the non-indictment with that, yes, which really set the thing off for everybody across the country because we thought that something would come about because it's on video.
Right.
Clear as the day.
Right.
As the sky is blue.
Right.
And there's still, there was nothing.
And he was saying, I can't breathe.
And the level of anger, you know, surrounding that particular case, because I think it was important that people saw it. Right. Mm-hmm. Because in a lot of these cases, Tamir Rice, they got to see it.
Yeah.
Right. But Alfred Wright, Mike Brown, Trayvon Martin, we didn't get to see it.
Yeah.
And so people actually being able to access it from their phones, their desktops, and sitting there watching him lose his life.
Right.
Senseless. As it could have been done. People sitting watching, it could have been done a million different ways.
So many.
Right. It, you know, and the loss of life in that.
What are the tasers for?
And I'll tell you this. I used to work for TDCJ before I saw the light and said I refuse to be part of this machine anymore. I was a lieutenant for Texas Department of Criminal Justice. I actually was written up. I got 3 months probation, okay, because during a use of force where this, you know, one of the offenders like just acted out and we had, it was like three or four of us had to take him down. And I got written up because after putting him in handcuffs, I didn't turn him on his side. Nothing happened. He didn't get hurt. He didn't like, but no, during the review of the tape, the warden said, wait a minute, during a use of force, after you have detained the offender, you're supposed to turn him on his side. So if I got 3 months probation, right, in the prison setting where nothing, you know, the inmate wasn't hurt or anything, like, then how do we have police officers who are held to a much lower standard?
In the free world.
In the free world. In the free world. It's crazy.
So what is it that we must do to get this train moving to try to change the way that things are done?
Well, the first thing that we have to say is that the police cannot police themselves. Okay. We're not saying that they're, that all cops are bad, that every single police. No. But what we are saying is that when it comes down to cases of, listen, when you look at Jordan Baker's story, when you meet Jordan's mother, when you see Jordan's son, when you really get a feel for who he was, you don't see the picture that they want to paint, right? So if it weren't for Officer Juventino Castro, okay, who, the start of this thing was him saying, hey, this guy on a bicycle looks like a suspect. That racial profiling right there is the problem, right? So in October of this year, me, myself, I was sitting at James Boot Park, which is not too far from where the courthouse is, not too far from Clayton Homes, right? Sure. And I happen to drive a nice car. And I'm sitting there eating a Subway sandwich at noon, right? So it's daylight. It's broad day. I'm eating a tuna fish sandwich from that Subway right there next to the Shell and reading a Malcolm Gladwell book, okay? And I look up and there are two minor patrol officers. I look back down, eat my sandwich, read my book, and look over, and now they behind my car, running my plates. So I walk over and I'm like, excuse me, is there a problem? You know, this is my car. Am I like parked wrong or something? Very first question, what do you do for a living? Okay. Next thing, do you have your driver's license? And not just what they were saying, but how they were saying it to me. Because I had on a snapback hat, a t-shirt, some basketball shorts. It was a free day for me, right? So at the end of this, I ended up going to Internal Affairs the next day, doing a report, going through the actual process, getting it notarized. I mean, you have to jump through hoops. And at the end of this, there was nothing, even from my complaint, that was reviewed outside of their department, right? So the eventual mediation that I got was me sitting across from the two officers that were on the horses and this lady who used to be a police officer herself. And they're basically high-fiving each other over the table. And I said, you know, are we really taking this seriously? Because who's to say that Juventino Castro, that officer that racially profiled Jordan Baker that day, didn't have a history of this? Who's to say that maybe there were seven times in the past month and that sergeant could have said, hey, Officer Castro, is everything going okay? Because we see you've had seven complaints. They don't even track it. It's kangaroo court. And that's why we need a community policing model that is not within HPD alone. It has to have some outside oversight.
Mm. So what is the mission of Houston Justice Coalition?
We have, it's so many layers, but I honestly would say the core of everything is increase and heighten civic participation, because at the end of the day, I think that's what it all boils down to, because if you look at it when it comes to, and also, I mean, there's civic responsibility among individuals, of course. We don't want to, you know, mitigate that or take that responsibility off our plates. It's the idea that you have people, right, that you elect to make decisions on your behalf on a regular basis.
And they forget that they work for us.
Right.
We elect them and they work for us.
And I didn't, we didn't see them at those rallies either. So remember that in November.
Also, it's also about us, right, being smarter and more responsible in regards to who we commit our votes to. Because, again, if this is an issue, say I'm an African-American, young African-American woman, this is an issue for me. Okay.
Yeah.
So I have three older brothers and God forbid something happens to them. They're shot on the street. My mother has, you know, no understanding or no idea of how to maneuver the political process. Right. So if I'm saying, okay, I'm electing council member so-and-so, I know for a fact he'll speak up about this.
Right.
Or I know for a fact she'll speak up about this. But if they're not mentioning issues that are important to us, or they're not championing causes that are important to us, or they're not even on the forefront of policies that affect us, then what are we really here for? And honestly, and it's not a bash at elected leadership. It's more so, it's a double-edged sword. Like, it's both of us. It's them understanding our needs and us understanding our needs and us not coming together to the table to say, this is the vehicle into which this stuff needs to get done. So civic participation is what it boils down to, getting people in those capacities that give a damn about your issues, one, and that are willing to take it to the next step to see it through to the end. Not just, oh, this is great, good work, all right, let's appease, you know, the small group, so that the masses don't come. No, this is about the masses.
Because we can't just wait till November and say, y'all get out and vote, right? And we can't just say between now and then, just register to vote. No, no, no. We're going to give kudos to City Councilmember Dwight Boykins, City Councilmember Larry Green, who have met with us and who are actually sitting down and have committed to, you know, to doing these things. But then there are other people in elected leadership who don't understand. When we elect you, we send you with a grocery list to your respected place. So if it's City Hall, if it's the State Ledge, or if it's, we send you with a grocery list. And if we say we baking a cake, we need flour, sugar, milk, whatever. And if you bring back a brisket, you don't get to go shopping anymore, So, so you asked this question, like, what specifically is it that we're working towards? We talked a little bit before about this community policing model. When complaints are made, or when these body cams are put on these officers, we need to be able to have a mechanism that tracks complaints, number one. Number two, there needs to be teeth in the policy, which means if I'm Officer Douglas and I'm out there and I say, well, screw it, I'm just not going to cut my camera on. I'm going to do whatever I want. No, there has to be something that says, okay, when Officer Douglas does this, then here's step one, step two, and then you're Mr. Douglas now. You don't get to be Officer Douglas anymore, right? When we go back to the grand jury process, we're on a hashtag race to 1,000, right? Because we want to get 1,000 willing, able people that want to be grand jurors, right? We've been to Wheeler Avenue. We're going to be at Holman Street Baptist this Sunday,
right? Community of faith. And so we're increasing those outreach efforts.
We want to be able to say to the county court, right, we went and recruited 1,000 for you. And you still didn't use the pool, right? We went out and found 1,000 and only 7 people got to participate. Right. So, we're going to make a full faith effort to use the current system while also trying to, you know, make tinkerings here and there. But at the end of this race to 1,000, we will have the data, right, to be able to say we're keeping in touch with these people. When they sign up, we get their name, number, email address. We calling them back, inviting them to our next meeting, which is going to be January 8th
at KCOH.
You know, at 6:30. But no, we're keeping up with them, and people are picking this up. People are saying, oh man, like, let's be a part of this, because it is a problem. Think about this. The next time, everybody got a cousin. I got a cousin right now that's serving time. Think about this. Who do you want that's in that grand jury? Because I'm going to tell you what the prosecutor does. The prosecutor comes in and says, we have Mr. Douglas, who was caught with X amount of marijuana, and he owned the car, right? And if you have 12 people in a room that don't have a cousin, like I got a cousin, because my question, me, a 28-year-old black man, I would say, well, wait, who else was in the car with him? Was it other people riding with him? Was he in the front seat or the back seat? Because that's where my mind goes. Mm-hmm. Like, just because it was in his car,
he
don't mean
Kendrick and him. Right. And we know what happens when you get with Kendrick and him.
Exactly.
So, you know, you understand that dynamic is a possibility. And if there's people in there that doesn't know the black
experience. They're not even asking those questions because they're just like, well, yeah, it's his car, and indict him. Right, and just to think that it's so scary. It is 2014, and you literally have this pick a pal. There's no people of Houston. I could be a commissioner. You know where I would go? I would go to Facebook. Okay, it would be 12 young people, a couple of Latinos, a couple of whites, but mostly black, right? Mm-hmm. And it would all be leaning in one direction. And we cannot have an aristocracy in our judicial system because people's lives are on the line.
Think of
how many people are serving time right now that should have never been indicted, and how many of these police officers and other killings that are happening all the time that get a free pass. Mm-hmm. A free pass. And you know what? Going back to that story where, you know, I was working at the prison. You know what? My very next use of force, I was a little more careful before I even did it. I was like, oh, wait, I got 3 months last time. Let's see if we can talk them down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it gives you that extra layer. And we are basically, if we sit back and allow this to happen, we're given a green light to police to do whatever. And we cannot let that
happen. And they still are. I mean, with the latest case, I'm drawing a blank because I can't think of the young man's name.
Jordan Baker.
Oh, okay. It was Jordan Baker. Yes. Okay. Dash cam off, body cam off.
Right. Wait, he was off. He was an off-duty police officer.
In his private vehicle.
He was trying to get his Chrysler
300.
Wait, no, I didn't know that.
Yes.
His Chrysler 300.
So Jordan Baker was riding his bicycle, okay, to the store. Juventino Castro, the officer, stops him and says that he looks like a suspect because they had some robberies, right? So why couldn't the conversation have been, hey, young man, since you probably live around here, we're looking for a person who, why is the assumption that it's him?
Because Juventino is not of the community, so he may have never seen Jordan Baker before, and that's another problem. Mm-hmm. If you're not of the community, you don't have these relationships, you don't know, that's Jordan, that's Janet's son.
And you know what? That is the key problem because I was talking to some folks a couple of weeks ago here on Access Houston, and I said, I think the problem started when the police stopped living in the same community
and
that they policed.
Because
when I grew up, I knew the officer that was in my neighborhood because he also lived in that neighborhood. And there was a rapport with the officer and the community or that particular neighborhood.
And it matters because you have there's a sensitivity there. Because if I live in the Woodlands or the Atascocita, and here I am in Third Ward, Fifth Ward, right? Okay. Clinton Park.
Okay.
With no regard for the neighborhood or the people in it.
Yes.
I mean, that's a crazy dynamic to me.
And going back to the whole October 8th thing when I was racially profiled, you know what they told me at the end? I may want to be careful because there's a lot of people that hang around there from, you know, the Clayton homes, and there's a lot of homeless people, and it's not if I'll get mugged, but when. And I stopped them. I said, no offense. I said, but I wasn't scared at this park till y'all stopped me.
Wow.
I wasn't worried about the people that's over there, you know, eating, or maybe the people that's sleeping under the bridge. My heart didn't start beating like this till y'all stopped me. I'm more scared of you. And that's the thing. And I told him, I said, I grew up 5638 Selinsky, South Park. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not afraid because I'm of the, you know. And so if you have people with a gun, right?
Mm-hmm.
Empower. And that's their first, you know, defense. And who's to say if it wasn't noon, if it was night, and I happened to reach for my ID too fast, and it would have been hashtag Darrell's Life Matters.
Like the situation with the guy, was he in South Carolina? He's pulled over. He was actually at the whole March on Washington. He was one of the speakers. Uh-huh. He was pulled over at a nearby gas station, and the trooper radioed to him and told him, hey, you know, I need you to get your identification. And so as he reaches for his identification, he immediately begins to shoot him.
Right.
Yeah. No regard, no warning, nothing. And the man even said, why did you shoot me?
Dude,
you gave this man a direct
instruction
to get his identification.
He gets his identification.
And then you shoot him anyway.
Even when you comply, there's still the, you know, possibility that you could still be killed.
And then we have
to, he could have died. Those could have been fatal wounds.
We have to ask these questions, too. Being a police officer is very stressful, right? And Juventino Castro was working a side job. Had he worked a full shift that day? And if so, he would have been more likely to reach for his gun. And do we need to put into the government code that if you are a police officer, you cannot work more than X amount of days per day? Or is it that we need additional training in the annual training? Because you know what? When you're out there, it is, you know, your life is on the line. Is it more training that's needed so that he would have reached to his left instead of to his right for the gun? Like, we can't sit back and just say there's nothing that has to be done. And so we are pushing forward at City Hall. Yes. We've met with Adrian Garcia, too. Kudos to him, who has sat down and said, yes, we need community inclusion and we need, you know, that type of oversight, you know, to keep everything in line.
So the meeting is Tuesday, the 6th. Correct?
Our community meeting? It's January the 8th.
January the 8th. January a Thursday.
Yes.
Thursday. This Thursday, the 8th. Where at?
KCOH.
KCOH.
So.
And how? And
5511 Alameda.
Right. Okay. And we're asking people to go log on to www.houstonjustice.org, sign up, get added to the email list. We have, you know, we have the once a month meeting, but we also have what are called huddles. So one example of a huddle before, because we had a protest last week on Sunday. Sunday there was a protest. You know, the day before that, we're meeting and making the signs and getting ready and coming up with a chance. So, you know, sign up, come to the huddles. You know, when we're phone banking, one huddle may be us knocking on doors. We were in Third Ward knocking on doors, guiding people to our last meeting. We're over 324 people signed in, but we know it's more than 400 people in the room at the El Dorado Ballroom. Like, be part of this. There is something that you can do. Can't stop, won't stop.
Well, let me say, I applaud you all for starting this initiative here in Harris County and in the city of Houston, because it is well needed. I think, as you all expressed, a lot of people are fed up and something needs to be done. And we all need to handle this collectively because that's the only way that they are going to get it. So I want to thank you guys.
Thank you
so much. Shakira, Dennis, and Darrell Douglas, co-founders of Houston Justice Coalition, bright students at TSU. Bright future for you, Shakira. You got it going on, baby girl.
Oh, Lord, thank you.
And thank you guys so much. And you are listening to Access Houston on 97.9 The Box.
We'll be back with more Access Houston on 97.9 The Box.